Hello, and welcome to Literally from the North Shore. We continue today with the Bowser Chronicles, written by Two Harbors native Glenn Sandvik and read for us by KTWH volunteer Tom Kohler. Continuing now where Tom left off yesterday.
Yes, Bowser, scurvied watch cat, came back to the Great Lakes shore, a sorry creature beyond doubt, a hellbound cat for sure. On Duluth's seamy bowery beneath the point of rocks, he once again tried to blend in, yet seemed still to court knocks. One man alone among the dregs to that cat was not cruel. He was a brute of some repute, Peter Olson O'Toole, a Swedish-Irish native son at Silver Islet born. Pete's was an iron titan's frame, his head of hair was shorn. Olson O'Toole had worked the woods, the mines, the docks, the lake, no job too hard, nor air too low, if money he could make. Yet harsh as work and life might be, he'd laugh, his eyes would shine. A boisterous yet good-tempered soul, was he mad or divine? He'd given up moiling the earth to heed a higher call. His mission was, he'd preach where'er to bring God's love to all. Sky Pilot Pete, he called himself, while singing heaven's tunes in lumber camps and iron pits, on wharves and in saloons. To hellfire for their carnal sins he would all souls remand, and fleshly sins and demon rum were sins Pete knew firsthand. In Bowery taverns Pete would lay his mother's Bible down, lift Bowser by his scruff forehead, proclaim to all around, if God this putrid creature gives the joy of life on earth, just think the joy eternal for sinners in his son's birth. Pilot Pete smiled upon that cat and made sure he was fed, gave Bowser fish and milk to drink and a trunk for a bed. Bowser, bleary-eyed as he was, seemed to have found some peace with Pete O'Toole, nobody's fool, that cat's decay did cease. Ah, but the tugs of sin were strong on one man's mortal soul. He too often set Bible down, a bottle to enfold. His Swedish-Irish charm, his wit, shone as bright as his pate. Again, too often he'd not stop before it was too late. Pete laid his healing hands upon a policeman's young wife. Six coppers beat the sky pilot within inches of life. They bound him, and with his sea trunk threw Pete down a ship's hold. In utter darkness for 3 days that cat trembled with cold. Then sunlight blinded Bowser when his trunk on a pier crashed. He scrambled to save his fur as a barrel his bed smashed. That cat wandered the waterfront of what port he knew not, yet something seemed familiar about the unknown spot. A dock, rail spurs, a warehouse row suggested long ago, a garbage can newspaper told he was in Toledo. Memories of his youthful days rattled in Bowser's mind. On impulse, the spot of his birth he decided to find. Along a dead-end, mud-lined street, a dingy bar outside, he spied a sleeping bulldog who made him tingle inside. In visions from his mother's heart that pug to him was shown as the father whose ears and teeth was all he'd ever known. Before Bowser could make a move, the dog woke up and spat. With barks of blood and toothy snarls, he drove away that cat. Bowser, that dog-eared, dog-toothed cat, fled his own father's bark. Beneath a trash-strewn sewer grate, he hid in stinking dark. There'd be no family reunion, that much he knew for sure. Worse thoughts would haunt him through the eyes of his paternal cur. Was that glare and its baleful bark just normal dog-cat stuff, or were sins of an errant son what made that mutt so gruff? The specter that the bulldog's ire was aimed at him alone set Bowser's troubled brain afire, turned his frail heart to stone. That cat slunk out of Toledo aboard a garbage scow, a morbid, morose countenance etched underneath his brow. Of days and weeks and months on end around the inland seas, of ships and ports, of beast and men, he had no memories. His mind might wake, his body shake with must and cold and damp, or drenched in sweat by heat beset on a rust bucket tramp. His stupor did not stop or slow his temporal decay. The cat grew thinner and more foul with every passing day. One time he'd roused in rancid grains in New York's Buffalo, weeks later in fetid stockyards, the shame of Chicago. Milwaukee, Green Bay, Muskegon, to Collingwood around, Alpena, Saginaw, Detroit, at Pigeon Bay aground. Sandusky, Erie, Conneaut, that cat slummed in all ports, as party or as witness to deeds of the foulest sorts. Yet somehow, somewhere, for some cause, one corner of his soul kept embers of truth and of love alive, kept Bowser whole. Yes, that rueful watchcat Bowser, though his sharp eyes grew dim, still had an inner compass which toward rightness pointed him. Dragged down in moral turpitude, yet upward he was called, up north to Superior, his heart, his body hauled, till one night on a self-made dare he passed the Sioux upbound. Zephyrs sailing the greatest lake made his heartstrings resound. But while home round Superior he skirted Agate Bay, something there, or perhaps not there, made that cat stay away. In autumn of 1918, Bowser was on the land, a nomad on rock-studded farms, worked by horse and by hand. He lived with a Finn family when, hit that year's holocaust, through forests, fields, and swamplands roared deadly flames and exhaust. From near Moose Lake, straight through Cloquet to Duluth in its way, creatures human and advanced met ends too gruesome to say. Such seemed fate at the Finn's farm when Emil caught the cat's eye, led his family where Bowser led, as flames ripped through the sky. In a dugout cellar milk house under a hill they stayed, the wife, his Finn, two small children, scared yet thankful they prayed. In cool dark the mother clutched a baby to her breast. A young girl, scrawny as that, hugged Bowser to her chest. At dawn the inferno had passed, their world in ashes left. Of food and home, of all but hope, that family was bereft. But, like so many others who the firestorm did survive, they rejoiced for that saving cat, thanked God to be alive. Once again Bowser's ears would hear his deeds and name proclaimed. The fire feline saved human lives. Of such, people exclaimed, in the Holocaust's aftermath he sought kindness to do. At Cloquet worked an orphanage for stray cats and pups, too. He gave to mice grains for winter, made sure they had their fill. Yet though in service at God's work, his heart was sad until it was in the 11th hour on the 11th day of the 11th month that cat felt malaise pass away. The war was at last over and doughboys were headed home. Bowser, his insight in focus, knew he'd no longer roam. For Agate Bay that cat set out to await Edna G. That drafty tug was bound to be bound for the inland sea. But eagerness notwithstanding, contrition at him gnawed, for Bowser was remorseful that, leaving, he'd been slipshod. At Two Harbors and all therein he'd raised his nose and tail, but his disdain he knew was vain, all on his own he'd fail. Thus, with temerity, that cat, and with trepidation, came home to that small port unsure of repute or station. The first being to welcome him, from whom he'd earned rebuke, was his once true and bosom pal, that royal mutt, the Duke. Though light between the ears, that dog was as big as his heart. A feast for a prodigal fit would his homecoming start. But Duke sensed Bowser's ill at ease and knew that cat's concern, so instead found him safe refuge to wait that tug's return. That winter, Duke at Agate Bay gave Bowser asylum, let none know, home to two harbors, that wandering cat had come. In an attic near a chimney warmed by the bricks he stayed, the very spot the long war passed where Uncle Cully'd laid. Yes, the war's tattoos marked Manny, the cat not least of all, but Bowser moved from sins of war to return to his call. In quiet and in solitude he sought his mind to mend, while his body was replenished by the Duke, his true friend. In church lofts, beneath vacant pews, he listened and he heard the voice of God again made clear in music and the word. But human bonds he was unsure he e'er again would see, until one night he bumped into the laundryman Lee Key. Inscrutable as Lee Key was, he smiled to greet that cat. There's light in life's darkest lessons, never lose sight of that. Life's lessons Bowser also took at Hotel Agate Bay, in the rooms of old Ed Lewis, the town's talk in his day. Ed was a mineralogist and ore finder by trade. His North Shore findings headlines found, but ne'er a nickel made. Corundum that launched huge 3M, the Highland iron fields, gold mines of laughs at Ed's expense were such ventures sole yields. But Ed's journals and memories enlightened that cat's views of his home and the world at large, of what he knew as news. Thus, as winter receded and vessels took to the lake, Bowser with confidence prepared his watch-cat post to take. Bowser, reborn watch-cat, would wait and watch for Edna G. On that tugboat's homecoming day, he scanned the inland sea. Townspeople swarmed across her pier, lined up on the breakwall. On an ore dock, George Olson peered, foreshadowing his fall. While through a glass her master spied, yet that cat's keen eyes caught the first glimpse of the vet's coal plume, a distant eastern spot. The Edna G steamed into view, then into Agate Bay. The city band played Sousa tunes, folks whistled and hoorayed. In simple ceremonies, with salutes and a handshake, the Navy returned that tugboat to work the greatest lake. Her captain and her railroad crew stepped gingerly from shore, eager yet unsure how that tug had weathered salt and war. The cat likewise padded aboard, his post to reassume. Though all looked as before, there were scents like a sealed tomb. The foreign airs, the must and rust, seeped from each pipe and seam, but were erased by elbow grease and much freshwater steam. Though the Navy had worked her hard, that fact was plain to see. Power and stamina remained, hallmarks of Edna G. But one part of that tug was gone, which Bowser long would mourn, a workboat's only luxury, her pride since she was born, the eagle of her pilot house screaming its bronze virtue. That symbolic bird had vanished, nobody knew where to. Perhaps a war prize taken home by a draftee to sell. Yes, both tug and cat testified that war could be true hell. Bowser, that watchful watch-cat, and that tugboat Edna G. took up their peacetime vocations of iron delivery. Soldiers took up their former jobs on rails and in the ground. The small port clanged and hummed with prosperity new found. for while steel made in peacetime was the same as made in war, the social-economic gains in peace seemed so much more. Along with jobs, doughboys took up wives and families as well. The cat watched such connubials, which jingled his heart's bell. Yes, Bowser, if the truth be told, sometimes pined for a mate, a female companion with whom to share life and fate. His homely, handsome, doggish mug, tawny coat, and sure-bound, turned heads and thrilled hearts of felines, the Great Lake all around, and once or twice, or maybe more, his head was also turned by femme fatales whose visions were ever in his heart burned. For like Citizen Bernstein in Charlie Kane's movie tale, Bowser's keen eyes and keener mind would not let heartthrobs pale. A Sand Island lightkeeper's puss, a church cat from the Sioux, a barroom temptress in Duluth, a tofty spaniel, too. A fling or two, a dalliance he took was taken in. Of such were Bowser's memories of mates that might have been. Though that cat never took a bride, to no one spoke his heart. In fact, he never spoke, made of silence an art. Yet all who came to know him knew his one true love to be, that Lake Superior lady, that tugboat Edna G. That he-cat Bowser never quit his lifelong bachelorhood, but from that tugboat he watched and saw wedlock do much good. One marriage in particular stood out in that cat's mind for reforming an errant life, affirming humankind. The groom, Peter Olson O'Toole, Bowser knew in dark days, tossed from a ship in Toledo, the two had parted ways. Soon thereafter, Sky Pilot Pete gave his heart to a maid, a shopkeeper's straight-laced daughter, her locks a golden braid. For Marie he'd do anything, change his whole life around. In trusting love for Pete alone, Marie let her hair down. A bride, soon babies, and in them all pleasure he did take, and for their livelihood he worked all round the greatest lake. The highway hugging the north shore had not yet been put through. It must have been the autumn of 1922. O'Toole was second keeper at the famous Split Rock Light. His Marie and their three young ones kept his world shining bright. But brightness was in crisis, as light oil was out of stock. Northeast winds kept the amaranth from mooring neath the rock. Peter O'Toole, nobody's fool, knew men in peril were without a light to pierce the night. All vessels faced danger. So O'Toole's bride and children shined a spot above his neck. With a tallow taper he climbed up to the lantern deck. All through that night at Split Rock Light a beacon lakeward shone. Pete's great bald head its brightness shed to guide ships safely home. Bowser, that tugboat watchcat, had for lighthouses an eye. Superior's beacons, like that tug, sailor's aid would supply. All lights round the lake called out their warnings to all ships. In silent tones each light's its own, decrying nature's grips. That cat knew best that beam which blazed across the Agate Bay, from the light as old as that tugboat, burning night into day. A golden shaft rotated from the red brick lantern tower, stretching horizons like clockwork 300 times an hour. Across the water the light shone, rebounding off the town, a brilliant calmness for that cat on that tug bedded down. Yet anywhere on the Great Lake, Bowser knew where he'd be by timing and intensity of rays over the sea. His keen cat eye a flash would spy long before men could note, so he'd ken sans compass or map the track of any boat. and unknown perils of the night round Superior's shore had their darkest secrets erased for miles and miles and more. From Split Rock on its sheer stone dome to sandy Whitefish Point, Menagerie to Mendota, each darkness would anoint. Harbor lights, Duluth to Marquette, the Portage Waterway, beacons throughout the Apostles on the Slates and Big Bay. That silent cat knew every light which crossed the Great Lake shone, with voiceless cries, unuttered sighs, a guiding echo's tone. Bold warning shouts, never called out, rang through the onyx air, the silent screams of lighthouse beams, beware, longships, beware. Yes, that tugboat watch cat witnessed lights boldly pierce the gloom, saving vessels and men alike from their watery doom. But Bowser also watched in shock deeds of humans so dark, no beacon air could penetrate nor any lightness spark. One summer's eve, a Duluth street, that tug up for a tow, that cat saw and heard angry men parading to and fro. In sullen, surly whispers and in curses cried aloud, men of small minds and smaller souls made a mob of the crowd. They decried a most heinous crime by a young woman told, against three carnival workers hind their circus tent's fold. The mob demanded pain and blood, sought vengeance without fail. With rocks and clubs drove police off and stormed into the jail. Could passions have been fueled to rage and anger flushed by fright because the carnies' skins were black while all the towns were white? The three young men, bound up in ropes, were dragged into the street. Though each had denied any crime, all knew the fate they'd meet. Fear of men glistened in their eyes as the crowd spat and clawed, yet in their faces Bowser saw each was at peace with God. From one lamppost all three were hanged, amid jeers, cheers, and sneers. Then, as life ebbed and lights fell dark, the mob shed bitter tears that night as that tug headed home, neath skies as dark as skin. A storm rolled over Duluth's hills with lightning and gale wind. Bowser, from that tug's pilot rail, watched nature's tempest songs and knew God in heaven had shown his fury at men's wrongs. The Edna G. and sister ships on the freshwater sea knew nature as their best ally and their worst enemy. Among nature's pernicious tricks which with relish she played, those mystic floating clouds of fog haunted the marine trade. The fogs of Lake Superior could be bright as the sun, or dark and cold and sullen as night stalkers on the run. Wisp airs might slink across the lake to swallow ship and crew, which made that tug's job difficult when vessels hid from view. In fog, a Laker's forward crew could lose sight of her aft, and in such cases more than once near sliced that tug in half. Yet real dangers came to loom when pea soup settled down to blot out not just sailors' sights, but sounds to also drown. In flannel fogs even that cat lost his full sense of sight, and Bowser's ears, sharp as a ping, still could not hear things right. For though the Edna G. might lay just 90 yards from land, the port's foghorn seemed to sound from every compass hand. The tugboat crew, waiting her tow, would hollow from the deck, hear Laker bells, starboard and port, then breathing down their neck. On just such days, Bowser's pal Duke would ride the tug to help. With forepaws on the forward rail, that dog would bark and yelp. Until one night, in soup so thick it pressed against your eyes, the Duke, hearing his voice behind, swallowed it in surprise. He turned so fast to hear himself in fog, he lost his tail. so he could neither bark nor wag till sunshine pierced the veil. Bowser, that tugboat watch cat, knew lake weather like his paw, and among nature's varied feats one instilled special awe. Winds northeast on the weather vane, mercury in a dive, no matter what the time of year, imperiled all alive. Northeaster, just the breath of it, in sailors' blood sent chills. Nor'easter, the full force of it, also spawned maddened thrills. Lake birds and beasts knew well enough to shelter from a blow, and most lake fish protection found by swimming deep below. But lake's men, for all that they knew, still did not know enough to get or keep themselves safe from nor'easter's brutal stuff. Nature's breath churned up combers huge, capping the lake in white, driving water at 60 knots, 25 feet in height. Where sea met land, havoc held sway, and beaches were swept clear, while streams that galloped to the lake sometimes flowed to their rear. All things not planted firm by God, all things anchored by men, might simply explode or simply dissolve, not to be seen again. Warehouses, docks, and breakwalls fell when real nor'easters blew, as at Duluth and Crystal Bay and Silver Islet, too. Folk stories also took root in the backwash of each storm. Such was the fish tree of Larsemont, a pine of gnarled form. Though nearly half a mile from shore, lake tempests scarred the tree and embedded in its red bark gifts from the inland sea. These countered a 4-pound herring by northeast winds set sail. That fish dove into the pine's trunk, impaled up to its tail. The Edna G. with her watch cat in nor'easters was bold, as in the epic Ought-Five blow which has before been told. Near every season, so it seemed, at least one storm did brew, which called that tug and that cat out for search or for rescue. The captain's log, which Bowser read, recorded each venture to aid men and ships in distress upon Superior. Those simple phrases and curt words in a book failed to tell the awesome weight of lives at risk which on that tug's crew fell. Sometimes the ships were lost, off track or hiding from the wind. At other times they were crippled by nature or by men. The list of storm-tossed vessels whom that tugboat gave aid to read like a shipwreck catalogue, a Julius Wolfe Who's Who.
We've been listening to Tom Kohler's reading of The Bowser Chronicles by Two Harbors native Glenn Sandvik. This was episode 3 of 5, so be sure to tune in again tomorrow for episode 4. Thank you to the author's family and the publisher for permitting us to broadcast this poem. If you miss an episode this week, remember, all the episodes are posted on our website, ktwh.org. The Literally from the North Shore page is found in the drop-down menu under Programs at the top of the page.